This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
It's my pleasure to welcome you to the Clark Howard Show. Our mission is to serve and empower you so you make better financial decisions in your life. Today we begin with my favorite Friday treat, Clark Stinks. Later, I want to talk about something you may be doing right now, driving. I have a new teen driver. There's some important things for you to know that will make us all safer, not just if you have a young driver, but even you looking in the mirror to make you safer too. And safe consumer advice. That's what you expect from me, right? Good advice, good information you can put to work in your wallet. That's why we do Clark Stinks. If there's something you've heard me say, an opinion I've given, advice that I've provided that you feel misses the mark, incomplete, incorrect, whatever, go to clark.com/clarkstinks to post it. And then once a week, Krista goes through your posts on clark.com/clarkstinks and shares them with you here on the podcast.
I should have never encouraged you to speak.
You must think I'm pretty stupid.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe you're right, pal.
All right, I'm going to start with this one. Clark, you stink. I've been listening to you since I was a little girl. You do give some great advice, but I was miffed at your comment about remote workers being passed over for promotions. You said that being present was key to moving up in the workforce. Well, I'm here to say that I spent 7 years at a prestigious law firm being present, working overtime, picking up extra projects, volunteering, you name it, I did it. I was passed over twice for two promotions and was told in maybe 4 to 5 years something would open up. I had all of the educational requirements completed and tenure. I applied for a remote law firm and got promoted instantly with a pay raise. Staying remote shouldn't be a downer. It's the future. Perhaps you could give advice on how to be present while working remotely. Keep up the good fight, Clark. Harmony.
Harmony, fantastic for you that the law firm you were working at kept holding a carrot in front of you and never giving you the advancement you were able to instantly find elsewhere. I think that's great. And what I talked about, in my opinion, is just human nature, that in a hybrid work environment where you have some people present in physical presence around the bosses versus somebody who's remotely working, who's part of meetings on Google Meet or Zoom or whatever platform, that the person who is only known over a computer connection typically will be passed up for promotions that will go to people that are present in person, just because that's the way we as human beings are. It's not going to be true in every case and circumstance. I just think it is a reality of the human emotion chip. But you were able to switch to a remote law firm. You're making more money. You are in an environment you prefer. And I think that's great.
Clark, you generally don't stink, and I love your show and the advice you give. You're, however, completely wrong about debit card protections for fraud. How do I know? I am a card services manager at a credit union and have been working claims and adhering to compliance rules for 16 years. Failure to adhere to federal regulations and bylaws of card branders such as Visa and MasterCard can cost issuers fines and penalties, not to mention angry members. If you can't have me on, maybe I can send you an outline on rules and regulations pertaining to debit cards, Lindley. And I did ask her to send us whatever she had.
Yeah, thank you, Lindley. Okay, so let's draw a distinction here. With a debit card, if fraudulent activity occurs on the card, you are ultimately not liable, just as you're ultimately not liable with a credit card. the actual verbiage of the federal rules, the regulations, make the fraud protection different and not as good on the debit card. But that's not the big issue I talk about when I'm referring to the piece of trash fake Visa and fake MasterCard. It's that when it involves a dispute about the quality or delivery of goods and services that you have actually ordered, not a fraudulent thing, but where you've ordered something, you do not have chargeback rights on a debit card like you do on a credit card. To give a little more meat on the bones to what I was saying, though, about the fraud action. So with a credit card, all that happens if somebody gets your number and they're creating fraudulent purchases is with a credit card, those purchases just show up, but no money's left your hands. With a debit card, the money has left your account, and then you're having to fight with the credit union in this case or the bank to get money restored to your account. They're allowed to take 2 weeks to give you back that money, and the credit union, neither the credit union nor the bank, is responsible for any losses you suffer by making a rent payment late, a mortgage payment late, a car payment late, or anything like that while you wait for that money to be restored. And I do look forward to seeing from Lindley the rules and regs she's sending to see if there is part of the story that I could be missing.
And from Suzanne, Clark, with regards to Amazon reviews being fake, I have learned that reading through the customer questions can often give a user a truer sense of product quality. Many people will comment if they think an item is garbage or useful. It can take a bit more sifting through than reviews, though if you look hard enough, it can sometimes be easy to spot the fake reviews. But there are way fewer fake answers than fake reviews. I hope this helps some. And someone else wrote in as well and said that they only look at the 3 to 4 star reviews on Amazon products.
That's an interesting idea as well. And Suzanne, I love your suggestion of looking at the questions to get a more legitimate perspective. And this is something that Amazon needs to fix, because the reality is the review thing is broken at Amazon. And a lot of people only look at the star rating, and that's why there's so much effort involved in putting fake reviews up to give a false sense of quality of a product or a seller.
And 2 for 1 in this, Clark Stinks. Here's the first one. Dear Clark, maybe put something for kids on your show. Whenever I'm in my dad's car, all I hear is blah, 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 Roth IRA, blah, blah, blah. Do this, do that, blah, blah, blah. Emily, age 8. And then, dear Clark, thank you for your show. My daughter doesn't understand the purpose of the Roth IRA, but she knows the term because of you. Thank you. Rich, age significantly higher than 8.
Just so you know, Emily, all 3 of my kids, all they ever heard from me growing up was blah, 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 blah.
Roth IRA, freeze your credit, blah, blah.
So I'll tell you a cute thing, Emily. So my oldest daughter was in a course in college as a freshman, and the instructor was talking about, I don't know what the course was, if it was economics or whatever, finance, was talking about saving for retirement. And so my daughter then pipes up and says, well, wouldn't the best thing be to open a Roth IRA? And the instructor said, yes, that's a great idea. And then after class, people were asking, so how do you know about that that thing you were talking about? So you never know what sinks in, even when you think all they're hearing is blah, 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 blah.
And this is from Sean. I find it offensive when you use the phrase third world country, most recently when talking about stolen cars being shipped overseas to sell. These developing countries all have areas that are far nicer than your average locale in the U.S., and even the worst of these countries have comparable locations here.
Sean, thank you, and I'm sorry that is said as a creature of habit. You know, I grew up in the era that there was the first world, which were the free countries of Western Europe, the U.S., Canada, Australia, Japan. And then the second world were the countries in the communist bloc. And then the third world was everywhere else. It is obviously a dated phrase. it would be better to use the phrase middle income countries, is in my mind an alternative to developing countries. I'll try to develop that as a new habit. I said develop, of speaking about the problems like the one I talked about with vehicles being stolen and shipped overseas.
In your last podcast, you mentioned not pre-washing your dishes. While I do agree that that's an unnecessary step, I wanted to let you know that people who use the individual detergent capsules are missing the dishwasher's own pre-wash cycle. If your dishwasher has two trays for soap, then you should be using powdered dish soap. This is because most dishwashers do a pre-wash with soap, drain it, then refill it using fresh soap. If you're using a capsule, you're most likely missing that whole cycle. Just a friendly tip before you do a side-by-side test with your wife. All the best, Cody in Seattle.
Cody, thank you. And the other thing is those little discs, those pods, are more expensive per wash than using just straight dishwashing liquid or powder that you pour in.
A few weeks back, you had a caller whose daughter was going to study in Scotland and wanted to know about discount international phone plans. I live in Texas, and most of my family live in Australia, New Zealand, and the UK. I have the Rebtel app on my phone and pay $5 a month for completely unlimited calls from my cell phone to Australia, or $10 for worldwide access. I've had an account with them for 4 years now. I have an hour and a half commute to the office, so I'm always talking to a different part of the world almost daily. And yes, just like me, my family can talk. Our calls are never dropped during the entire hourly drive. The fee is charged the same date each month, and I can connect with or drop any country anytime I like. Nicole.
Okay, Nicole. I thank you for the blast from the past. We haven't talked about or heard about Rebtel, and I don't know how many years, but yes, the Rebtel app is a great way to save on international phone calling, and it allows, as you said, over the data side of your phone, essentially unlimited free international calling.
Clark doesn't stink, but his naivety showed a little bit while talking about catalytic converter thefts. As someone who did not always run in the best circles as a teenager, I can tell you a cage around the converter would add no protection. What people do is carry a cordless Sawzall with a short metal cutting demolition blade and cut your exhaust pipe before and after the converter. It doesn't just make you not compliant with emissions in your state, but also makes your Honda sound like a drag car. I love the podcast. Keep up the good work. But really, the only thing you can do to protect your converter is park in a garage. Jimmy.
Jimmy, thank you. You know, that was a suggestion in one of the stories that I've read about the uptick in catalytic converter theft is that you park in a secured garage. And that is apparently the best fail-safe way to protect yourself from catalytic converter theft. But as someone else said, the best way to protect yourself is buy an electric vehicle, which I thought was a clever but somewhat snarky response.
A listener asked about setting up a special needs trust. Clark immediately jumped into a conversation about the 529 ABLE account and suggested at the end that they might want to consider a special needs trust later, but should start with the ABLE account. That is risky advice and may set this child up to lose all their government benefits. While the ABLE account is great for lifetime savings, assuming the parents stay alive, if that listener died the day after asking Clark his question with no trust, leaving all of his or her assets to the child with disabilities outright and not in a proper trust, they would immediately lose benefits. Setting up a special needs trust should be the number one priority before worrying about ABLE or next steps. Sammy.
Sammy, thank you for that, and I defer to your wisdom and expertise in this area. The ABLE account is a method of putting money aside for the benefit of a disabled person without them losing their access to government benefits. But you bring up something that is so key, and that's the importance of having a special needs trust for that child.
And we had a few about this. A young lady wrote that you can withdraw your 529 proceeds tax-free if you get a scholarship. That is not accurate. Luckily, my daughter is in the same situation as she is starting college in a few weeks. I've been hunting for a 529 tax specialist and haven't found one, but what I've been able to learn is that you can withdraw the value of the scholarship penalty-free, but you still have to pay income taxes on the growth. Daryl.
That is correct.
That's what some people say.
That is correct.
I have heard twice your comments about Zelle and how the banks establish accounts with this option already set up. This is not the case with my Bank of America accounts. On both my PC website and phone app, I must go in and set up the Zelle option. I'm not intending to support the usage of Zelle with this message. However, I wish you would stop scaring the pants off of folks about Zelle being already set up if this is not the case. Wayne.
Wayne, thank you. So I'm glad to hear Bank of America is not automatically embedding Zelle actively in people's accounts. Other financial institutions are. So let's give props to Bank of America for not engaging in that sleazy, underhanded, rotten practice. And driving, well, it's something that most of us do on a daily basis. And there's some simple things that you and I can do that will keep us and others safer on the roads. I have a teenage son who is about to get his, well, it's called in my state, a provisional driver's license, where he's allowed to drive alone in the vehicle, no other teenagers in the vehicle with him for a period of time. And you earn graduated privileges over time as a new driver. And I can tell you, seeing what our auto insurance rates are going to climb to, that the actuarial tables show he being on the road is something that is a danger to himself and to others. And Grant and I talk about this all the time, and we have an advantage here, and that is that Grant is learning to be a pilot and has spent time in the cockpit and is very methodical in an airplane and all the things you have to do about safety, 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 the checklist, everything else involved in staying safe. And I don't know if that's really going to transfer and translate to him being behind the wheel, but I can tell you that it's much tougher for Grant being of driving age than it was for his two older sisters. Because Americans, if you perceive that people are driving worse than they used to, they really are. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that you look at the accident statistics and Americans have become much more aggressive behind the wheel. In addition, they're constantly distracted by their cell phones. I mean, right now, in the midst of us doing the podcast, Krista has picked up her cell phone and is texting
someone we work with about the podcast that needed information.
But you're texting while we're doing it. And so if you were behind the wheel of a car,
I would not do that.
We are so distracted by our electronics. And in addition, vehicles have a lot more horsepower than they used to. There's a lot more bragging rights about the 0-60 speed of vehicles. More speed, more acceleration, more distractions. It's a deadly brew. The AAA reports that my son is a new young driver, is sadly 3 times more likely to be in a deadly crash than an experienced driver. And that's terrifying for me as his dad. And I can talk all day long about him doing the checklist, the safety checklist as an airplane, but what's he going to be like on the road? And is he going to anticipate the moves of other drivers? One of the things I'm always reminding him as I'm riding with him while he's driving, so I'll say, hey, watch those people in that Corolla up there. They're not paying attention to their driving. And what am I looking at? I'm looking at, this was not to pick on Toyota Corollas, it's just an example. Mm-hmm. It's that I'm looking for people whose speed is varying a lot and who are having trouble staying in their lane. The likeliest thing that's going on in that Corolla is the person is either texting or looking at their phone. And according to AAA also, the chances of somebody being in an accident go up by about 400% if they have their cell phone in their hand, regardless of what they're doing with it or on it. Just having it in their hand dramatically increases the chances of an accident.
And that's illegal in a lot of places.
Most states, yeah. So I spend a lot of time in Florida where it's illegal to hold a cell phone. And I've decided that people in Florida misunderstood and thought the law was it's illegal to drive without holding your cell phone. Because they're all holding the cell phone. And you see people texting. If I'm on a multi-lane freeway where it's more than two lanes each way, and I see a car that's having trouble staying in its lane, I immediately scan traffic around me, knowing that that person's an accident waiting to happen. And I'll move over where I've got, if I can, two lanes separating me from that individual. So having to use the cell phone while you're operating a vehicle going on a freeway 25 yards a second, think about that, a quarter of a football field every second, a typical freeway speed. That is just not a good plan. Because you glance away for just a second, bam. I saw an item in the Wall Street Journal that when people glance away from their phone for more than 2 seconds, the crash risk rises not marginally, but rises exponentially. So there's a lot that we as adults, you know, kids learn from our bad habits. So I wear a smartwatch. And a notification will come in while I'm behind the wheel. And like Pavlov's dog, I rotate my wrist and look down at it. And my kids, spotting the hypocrisy of a parent, holler at me for that. Now, there's a great solution that you can do on many cell phones and with some cell phone providers, some network providers, is you can do a DND function on your phone that when you're moving as a driver, you lose the ability to send and receive messages. And if you know that you respond like I do, that like you get an alert and you've got to look at it, using a DND notification system would be a really great way to protect yourself. And so think about these things. And just because your car has so many horses and can go 0 to 60 in so few seconds, it doesn't mean that you need to experience that every time you're behind the wheel. Moderation behind the wheel works. I remember my first vehicle was a Datsun B210, which people in the automotive industry called the Datsun B2 Slow. It had a 0 to 60 time of, it was like, what, 16 seconds or something like that? It was the slowest vehicle ever known to humanity, probably, other than a bicycle. And the lower acceleration almost certainly made me safer behind the wheel. Just a thought. Krista?
Speaking of cars, Rick in Texas says, we want to sell my brother our truck, but we want to build his credit. Can I co-sign a loan for him to buy our truck from us?
Oh boy, this is not how I want you to help your brother build credit. Because the problems that I hear on cosign loans among family or friends are so, so really ugly. If you want to sell your brother your truck and you can afford it, have your brother just pay you monthly for the truck where the note is with you. And for your brother to establish credit, there are much better ways using the credit card programs for people who need to build credit or repair credit. There are a lot of scamsters in that business. I have a briefing at Clark.com about how to get a card that helps you build or reestablish credit. But anytime you co-sign a loan for a family member or friend, if that family member or friend gets in a rough patch and can't make the payment, you're on the hook for that. If they go late with the payment and you don't know, your credit is trashed along with their credit. So I don't like co-signing ever any day for any purpose. Somebody really has to work on me to get me to say, okay, co-signing in that case would be all right. If you want to help your brother build credit. Another way to do it is to make your brother an authorized user on one of your credit cards, but don't give your brother possession of the card. And that will help your brother, as long as you're a really good payer, that will help your brother with his credit standing.
And Jenna in North Carolina says, I recently learned that my husband has $25,000 in credit card debt. I knew he had some debt, but not $25,000. Fortunately, my name is not attached to any of the credit cards. Although he takes full responsibility for the debt and promises to start focusing on getting them paid off, I'm still concerned it will impact any of our assets we have together, like our home.
So generally, you don't want to own assets together with someone who has pre-existing debt. There are only certain circumstances where the debt problems of your spouse can come back to haunt you. One is in the small number of states that are community property states, where the debt of one in a marriage is considered to be the debt of the other. You are not on any of these debts. You're not in a community property state, to my knowledge. And so your liability on the $25,000 does not exist. But in the event that your husband was sued, assets that are jointly owned could potentially face some risk. It's a minor risk, but some risk. And this happens a lot with couples, that there are either pre-existing debts coming into a marriage or separate debts that somebody has trouble dealing with. And what I would recommend in this case, because I can tell you're not happy about this, and if your husband is willing to do so, there would be a big advantage to seeking time with a credit counselor, with the local affiliate, with the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, which you can find at nfcc.org. What they will do if your husband's serious about dealing with this debt is he'll sit down, and it'd be better if both of you sat down with a credit counselor, worked on a budget for your husband, and worked on a plan to pay this $25,000 off over time.
And from Jason in West Virginia, I'm a coal miner and I want to get out of the mines. I have an investment account with $970,000 in it and a 401k with $200,000. Should I pay off my total debt of $210,000 now or let my investment account keep growing? I'm 44 years old and single.
Well, Jason, we will send referrals for people who'd like to go out with you with that profile of assets available. That's pretty great at 44. You should be extremely proud of yourself that you have saved about $1.2 million. As far as paying off your debt of $210, I don't know the sources of that debt. I would guess at that amount of debt, a lot of it is mortgage debt. And if I am correct that the lion's share of that is mortgage debt, it should carry a low enough rate that it would not be a priority to liquidate money in your investment account that could potentially trigger meaningful capital gains tax to pay off what should be significantly low mortgage interest rate debt. If most of that 210 is mortgage debt, I want to make sure you're in a proper mortgage right now, with mortgage rates being in the twos. If your rate is a lot higher than that, it'd be a great idea for you to reduce the interest rate on it while you're still working at the wages that you receive as a coal miner. It's going to be great for your health to get out of the mines. As you know, there's a lot of danger in the mines, both in the short term and long term, for your health. And I hope that the next career you find is one that you find very rewarding for you. And know that coal miners are eligible in a lot of states for job retraining programs for other jobs that are middle skilled jobs that pay decent wages, not likely as high as you've made working in a coal mine. And I want to thank you for joining us. Please visit Clark.com and ClarkDeals.com. And why don't you sign up for one of our free daily newsletters?